Valentine's only look at the trial came when he gave evidence, and he didn't like what he saw. The crisis in command required prompt action. The trial was held without a preliminary inquiry the next day in the old brick ranch-style home that served as a guardhouse. Perhaps it had once been a vacation home or a quiet retirement spot at the end of a winding mountainside road. The owner liked his architecture low and spacious. Wide porches, wide doors, wide windows. Inside, a great brick wall bisected the house into a huge living area and smaller bedrooms, which now served as cells, thanks to the limestone blocks of the walls. Tables and chairs were arranged, nearly filling the big living room, with the three judges pressed up against the longest wall and facing the prosecution, the defense, and a witness chair between the two. The temporary commander of the camp, Colonel Abraham, had excused himself from the trial, as traditionally no officer who stood to replace an accused superior could serve as a judge. The next senior officer in the shattered chain of command was a colonel named Meadows, who presided over the trial. At other times, he might have been a good officer, but all Valentine saw was a nervous man seated between Randolph and a lieutenant colonel who smelled, to Valentine's sensitive nose, of marijuana. Meadows had only one finger to accompany the thumb on his right hand, which clutched a handkerchief used every 15 seconds on his sweating brow. A throng of men outside, given no duties by officers sympathetic to Martinez, listened through open windows as best they could and added boos and cheers accordingly. Captain Moira Stajakowski, Valentine learned her first name when she took his statement, acted as prosecuting officer. She performed admirably under the circumstances, which at one point included a rifle bullet coming through a window and whizzing past her ear. Court adjourned to the floor. The rifle was eventually found, dropped in a stand of bramble, but not the shooter. After the missed shot, Valentine swore to himself that he'd get his charges out of the camp. This bit of Southern command was turning into a madhouse of angry, well-armed drunkards. But how far could they get on foot with a pregnant woman, old M-Daw, and a boy with a grudge-holding general following? Valentine told his story and answered five questions from Stajakowski, stressing that he had told General Martinez at the evening meeting the nature of his command and his use of the grogs. He tried to keep his voice even as he told of the summary execution of the grogs, simple but skilled creatures with whom he'd served for a year.
"Did it occur to you, Captain, that General Martinez and his men had been fighting those very creatures for years?"
Randolph, the officer acting as defense counsel, leaned down to put his face close to Valentine's, probably in an effort to intimidate. Both the defense counsel and the general had been drinking during the previous night as they talked over the coming trial, according to Stajakowski, and his breath made Valentine turn his face toward the triumvirate of judges to avoid the fumes.
"He's been fighting Quislings, too. Does that mean he kills every man who comes into the camp?"
"Answer the question, Valentine."
"I've fought grogs myself."
"That's still not an answer."
"I took it for granted that he's fought them."
"Then why didn't you make it clear that they were Southern Command soldiers and not prisoners? Why didn't you give them uniforms?"
"I identified them repeatedly. I didn't have any uniforms to issue, and even if I had, they served as scouts in the Kurian zone much of the time. That's what made them so useful. Putting them in our uniforms would have detracted from that. Even if they were naked, it shouldn't have made a difference because..."
"You'll answer the questions asked, Valentine. No more. You run on again and I'll have you arrested for contempt."
"I'm giving evidence. I'm not an official of the court. You don't have that power."
"Don't go tentpole lawyering with me. Or as soon as you get off the stand, you'll be brought to a cell."
Stajakowski stood up, her lower lip swollen from her biting it.
"Sir, can we close those windows and shutters? The circus outside..."
"Is of your own making. The camp is in disarray. This isn't a star chamber. The men have a right to know what's going on."
Valentine looked at Martinez's face. The general ran his knuckles down each side of his beard. Triumph shone in his bloodshot eyes. So it was with trepidation that Valentine stepped away from the courtroom and went out onto the wide porch. An egg overshot his forehead and smacked the door's lintel, releasing a sulfurous reek.
"Next person throws anything, deals with me."
Nail stepped up and put his thin frame in front of Valentine. The bear was sunken-chested, but his tattooed arms were solid muscle and tendon. Perhaps it was just the aggressive stance, but his blonde braids seemed to bristle. Men in Southern Command with regard for the integrity of their skeletal systems listened when a bear made a threat. The catcalls quieted. He escorted Valentine through the crowd using his elbows, an icebreaker smashing room for the larger ship behind. They made their way through the dirty camp. Nail found one of the squared-off green bottles, sniffed the mouthful that still remained inside, and drained it.
Oh, God damn, that's vile, Captain.
Nail sent the bottle spinning down the hillside. Then he led Valentine uphill a short way on a trail. Valentine smelled more cannabis smoke from a cluster of men in a hollow.
How long have you been in this zoo?
Long enough to know it's fallen to pieces. If you ask me, a couple of regiments of Quisling militia could sweep us off this hill with slingshots.
Well, you can see it. Why can't the others?
The general got him out of a tight spot outside Fort Scott. These guard brigades were the only ones to make it out of the pocket more or less intact, considering. Every time they thought they had us cornered, we got away. There's been some desertions, but no bad casualties since he took over. Food, light duties, wine, women, and song. Everything a soldier could ask for, as long as they don't ask for a victory. Whatever else you want to say about the general, he knows how to slip out of a noose.
I think he'll slip out of Stiakowski's.
You stepped into a private war, Valentine. Word around the campfire is, Martinez tried to pull her pants off using his rank, if you follow.
They crossed a narrow gully using a log bridge with a rope strung as a handhold.
When you say tried, you mean...
Nail winked.
Failed.
He's been making her life hell ever since.
More like the other way around. She came out of the mountain home GHQ, one of these invisible staff types that suddenly show up to fix screw-ups. Really sharp. Martinez made her his intelligence chief, but she quit. She landed in the quartermaster tents. If the men are well fed, I'd say it's because of her. The only ones to leave these hills are her scavenger patrols. Funny ideas, though.
What do you mean?
She said she was a bear.
Valentine raked his memory over.
I never met a woman bear. But then I don't know many in your cast.
No such thing. If she is, she's the only one I've ever met, too. I heard they tried it on a few women, but they died from whatever that goop is the life weavers pass out to the bears at invocation.
We lost one when I became a wolf.
Yeah, bears too. But it's 100% failure with women.
Valentine smelled a mass of humanity ahead, even upwind.
Now who are these?
You'll find out in about 5 seconds.
They passed down into a dimple in the hillside where Post had pitched their camp's tents. The tents were surrounded by a sea of uniforms. Guards, bears, wolves, even militia with inked insignia. All rose to their feet as Valentine and Nail crested the hill.
It started at the Grog burial this morning.
Post came up to them, with Anka following behind.
I would have liked to have been there, but my testimony was required this morning.
At first it was just the Marines. Then Finner and some wolves came up, and others just kind of followed. Before the holes were finished, it was in the hundreds. They had their guns. For a second, it looked like a lynch mob. Then Anka said something in his tongue.
The third lament for the unjustly killed. I practice saying it so often in Omaha, I could recite it backward.
When Anka spoke, everyone bowed their heads. When he finished, we all looked at each other like we'd all agreed.
We're ready to come or go at your order, Captain. Every man here has had it with Martinez. We're ready for a change.
Valentine looked at the expectant faces, from old friends like Jess Finner to strangers and back again. His stomach went tight and sour. The death of the Grogs and his actions had polarized the camp. If he stayed, there would be open feuding. He'd had enough of the torn bodies of friends and followers. A weary part of him had decided to vanish with what was left of the Thunderbolt's complement. All he wanted to do was find a safe valley somewhere, then perhaps try for Denver in the summer. But he had to tell the gathering something.
I'm glad you're here, all of you. I think... I know what happened to Anka's Grogs was wrong. Right now in that cabin, they're deciding if there's going to be a change. But even if there is, General Martinez will just be replaced by his Colonel Abraham.
He's worthless!
Look what he's letting go on outside the guardhouse!
Enough! He's your superior officer, and mine too, for that matter. If this camp divides, it'll be destroyed. If you're unhappy about something, you're free. You're expected to bring it to the attention of your superior. I know you have the best intentions, but let's not give even the appearance of mutiny. The soldiery of Southern Command I see gathered here is better than that. The trial is being conducted according to the uniform code. Whatever happens is going to be legal, and it'll be our duty to accept the court's justice.
They're breaking now!
The boy called from the window, where he was listening to the voices in the guardhouse. A restive mass of men, including Valentine, Anka, and those who had gathered at his camp, stood in the dark around the guardhouse, listening to the boy summarize the events inside. Colonel Abraham had placed a group of mounted soldiers around the court, putting them between the guardhouse and the men of any opinion. A masked fistfight had broken out when someone threw a rock at Anka and shouted, "You're next, Stoop," but it ended when the horses waded into the fray. Valentine waited, rolling and unrolling a piece of paper run off by the camp's primitive printing press. He had found it discarded in the camp.
Soldiers, I write you from a cell, knowing the unjustness of the charges against me and sustained by your presence. I put my trust in the hands of God, for he is the final arbiter, and whatever the outcome of my trial, I can face him content that I have done right for you and for our cause. I trust you to behave as the loyal hearts I know you are in this darkest hour of our struggle. Carry yourselves as men of honor, and obey until I am restored to command. P. Martinez, General.
Valentine reread the page-filling type. He admired the wording, equivocal enough to show Southern Command that he had asked the men of his command to keep order and obey those who had arrested and tried him, but he wondered if there wasn't an implicit threat in the final sentence. One interpretation of, "until I am restored to command," simply meant that he was confident of exoneration. A darker possibility could be that he was telling his loyalists that if he wasn't restored to command, he didn't expect them to obey those who had removed him. Stiakowski had been brilliant at the end, at least from what Valentine heard passed via the boy. The defense argued that it wasn't murder to shoot a grog any more than it was to put down a mule, and that rules that protected a Southern Command soldier simply didn't apply to this case. After some back and forth, the judges demanded that Stiakowski give evidence that a grog enjoyed the same rights as a Southern Command soldier. After a pause, during which Nail predicted that they were sunk, Stiakowski began a recitation of the court-martial of a sergeant in charge of a grog labor detail recruited from the ranks of prisoners. One of the grogs hadn't moved quickly enough to suit the sergeant. He shot the laggard as an example to the others. The wounded grog died, leading to the sergeant being brought up on charges of murder by the grog's keeper, a Mississippian named Steiner. Steiner pushed the case through both military and civilian officials, and testimony provided by grog experts from the Miskatonic affirmed that the grogs reasoned, felt emotions, formed attachments, created art, created tools, and the tools to make more tools. Indeed, everything humans did. Because of the landmark nature of the case, the sergeant, though found guilty, had his sentence reduced. Even when he shot the grog, he did so in the leg, trying to wound rather than kill. The case was affirmed a year later when a barroom brawl between a grog janitor and a riverboat man resulted in the death of the grog and manslaughter charges against the sailor, who ended up serving a long sentence. Martinez's counsel ended its defense with an argument that grogs were often summarily executed when taken prisoner, and the general was simply following a standard practice. The three judges, having no chambers to retire to, went out to the old garage of the guardhouse to discuss the verdict. They could just be seen in the gloom within through a single window in the back door. Valentine's ears picked up Randolph's raised voice again and again.
They were grog. In this type of emergency, the situation requires, and the court agree, that no man is indispensable.
Soldiers in the general's camp lit torches. The numbers had swelled in the darkness as others came off duty. Finally, the front door opened. The crowd quieted. He was finally able to hear voices from within the guardhouse, thanks to his lifeweaver-sharpened ears.
Bring him out of his cell.
Valentine thought he heard Stiakowski gasp, but he couldn't be sure. The boy at the window turned.
They're bringing him in!
The crowd froze. Only the crackle of torches and the horses' shifting weight from hoof to hoof came from the assembly.
General Martinez, this court recognizes your service to Southern Command. Every man here owes you a debt that cannot be repaid. However, the Uniform Code gives us little room for interpretation. As the code now stands, A guilty verdict in a willful murder case carries with it automatic penalties that cannot be suspended or commuted by this court in any way. Indeed, the only leeway given with a guilty verdict is life imprisonment instead of hanging. And, as matters now stand, there is no possibility of commutation from an executive authority, since the governor cannot be reached. Though the charges are of willful murder, this court, in cooperation with the prosecution, has decided to find you guilty only of simple murder, which gives us the leeway to...
Guilty!
Valentine heard no more. The mob threw two torches at the guardhouse. One sputtered out as it flew, the second landed on the timber roof alight. Soldiers shot in the air, the muzzle flashes giving brief illumination to the mass of contorted, shouting faces. The most violent ran for the porch, gripping their guns like clubs to smash at the shutters and doors. The guards ran inside, slamming the door behind them.
Banners! Close ranks!
A triangle of men formed around Valentine, backs to him. They were bears, big-shouldered giants who closed around him in a wall of muscle and attitude. Valentine, at 6'2", had to shift his head to see events around the guardhouse.
Nail, can we get closer?
We can try!
Anka, let's get to the door.
Anka's ears went back flat, the Golden One's equivalent of a man rolling up his sleeves, and he went down on all fours, using his two axe-handled shoulders to clear a path like a bulldozer going through brush. The bears followed, surrounding Valentine in a muscular cocoon. The horsemen were having no luck keeping the mob back. A few of the crowd had even been vaulted onto the roof. They extinguished the incipient fire, then continued stamping hard on the wooden eaves. Others kicked at the posts holding up the porch.
They'll tear it down in a minute.
The door swung open. General Martinez appeared on the wide porch, holding his hands up for quiet. Martinez's small round eyes were sorrowful. He was sweating, even in the cool of the winter night.
Soldiers! Soldiers! Quiet, men, quiet!
He was moving his arms as if giving a benediction. Even the men stomping on the roof stopped and waited for him to speak.
I convinced them to let me speak to you. This madness has to stop. The camp is tearing itself apart because of these charges and this trial. As you have heard, the court-martial has found me guilty.
Booze drowned him out until he held up his hands again. Valentine saw a self-indulgent smile cross his face, as if he found the whole proceedings to be a poorly executed practical joke.
Yes, guilty. For doing my duty to the best of my ability. They are trying to destroy our army, the last best hope for freedom for this land. Therefore, I declare my emergency powers to be in effect, and these proceedings voided. This camp is in a state of martial law. The judges, Captain Stiakowski, Captain Valentine, and any who helped them, are under arrest for treason.
Valentine and Nail exchanged incredulous looks. The legalistic gibberish made no sense to them, as technically the soldiery of Southern Command had always been under martial law from the moment they raised their right hands to be sworn in. A general in Southern Command had no emergency powers over his troops to invoke, any more than he had wings to fly. But the words sounded fine to the men, at least to the more stirred up among them. Martinez stood aside while a dirty flood of them poured into the guardhouse. A man flew backward out of the front window and lay on the porch, folded like a clasp knife, cradling his solar plexus and gasping for air. In a few seconds, Stiakowski was dragged out, held aloft by the mob with a soldier at each limb, followed by the judges, guns to their backs.
General, sir, I've been on your side the whole trial.
Randolph's mustache looked very black against his fear-paled face.
I'll make up my mind about you later, Randolph.
None of the general's orders are legal!
Stiakowski was held aloft by the mob. Blood ran from her nose as she turned to bite at a hand pulling her hair.
He's no longer in command! He can't!
General Martinez!
Valentine stepped up beside Anka.
I started this. I arrested you. I held a gun to your head.
The mob quieted at this. The men wanted to hear the exchange between their idol and his usurper. Valentine felt a hard hand on his shoulder.
What the hell are you
I'm the one responsible.
Valentine shrugged off the bear.
Nobody had a choice once I arrested you. There had to be proceedings from that point on. This is still Southern Command. I'm the only one you should charge with treason.
Randolph, here's a chance to redeem yourself. Shoot that mutinous bastard right now, here in front of his pet Grog.
Diakowski writhed atop her holders.
This is insane! Don't be an idiot, Randolph! Put me down now!
Valentine saw the desperation in her upside-down eyes.
You'll be on the ground, all right.
Valentine stepped forward.
What's the matter, Martinez? Afraid to do a summary execution yourself? How come somebody else has to pull the trigger for you? You never been blooded?
Somebody shoot!
Randolph reached for his holster. Anka chambered around in his long Grog rifle, and Martinez looked down the barrel of 50-caliber death sighted on his chest. Nail and his bears came forward, again surrounding Valentine. A short submachine gun appeared like magic in his hands.
No. Anyone shoots Martinez, and my team comes up on that porch after you. We won't leave enough of you to fill a shoebox. Then we start killing everyone with a hand on Stiakowski. Then, everyone who tried to interfere with either of those jobs. How many of y'all do you think we can get before we go down? 20? 40?
Whose side are you on, Lieutenant? Sounds like you boys are getting set to do the Kurian's work for them.
That's so, General.
Rain was the largest of the bears. He pulled a knife from his belt, tossed it in the air, and in the second before he caught it again, drew a tomahawk with his left hand.
But only if you start it. My finishers are out. Any blood spills, they won't go back in again without your gut strung on them.
He's not a General, Rain. Not anymore.
Martinez is right. Let's not do the Kurian's work for them. What'll it be, Martinez? A bloodbath?
The bears and Anka must have made an impression. The crowd shrank away, perhaps not wanting to be the first to be tomahawked on Rain's way to the General.
Name your terms, Valentine.
First, nobody gets arrested for treason. Second, Stiakowski and the judges walk out of camp with us. Somehow I think there'd be reprisals if any of us stayed. Third, you let anyone who wants to go with us leave. Peaceably.
This is mutiny, Valentine.
You have to have military organization to mutiny against. Your command is that of a warlord, maybe. But not armed service as Southern Command defines it.
Then it's to the warlord to give his terms to those he's defeated. You and your men can leave. You may take personal possessions only. No Southern Command weapons, food, or equipment. You walk out of here as civilians, and I'll be sure to let my superiors know why that's the case. We won't be sorry to see you go. My men don't want to breathe the same air as traitors.
It's awful free with that word.
Try to get our guns. We'll walk out over your dead.
Valentine put a hand on his shoulder.
Wait, Lieutenant. Nobody gets killed. That's good enough.
Is this a surrender, my David?
A tactical retreat, old horse. You have it, Martinez. We walk out with just our possessions. Now let Captain Stiakowski go. We'll be gone in 24 hours.
This looks like a conference of war.
Anka opened the tent flap for Finner. It was the next day. Stiakowski, Post, Nail, and strangely enough, Colonel Meadows all sat around a folding camp table spread with maps.
An informal one. Jess, they tell me you know the mountains east of here better than anyone. What are our chances of getting 700 people to the Arkansas River without using any Kurian-patrolled roads?
I don't see anyone smiling, so I guess this isn't a practical joke.
700?
That's what the numbers packing up look like. Some are good soldiers, sick of hiding in the hills. Some are afraid that the general's gone loco.
Meadows tapped his chest with the hand missing the fingers for emphasis.
Stiakowski says the hills are our only hope for moving that many without being noticed. The Quislings stay out of the mountains because of those feral reapers, except for big truck patrols. We'd hear those coming.
Finner looked at the maps. One, covered with a sheet of clear plastic, had a cryptic mark over where Valentine's refugees had been camping when the general added them to his command.
I was coming here to tell you that we've got two platoons of wolves ready to go out with us. With them screening, we might be able to do it. The life sign will be horrendous, We'll draw trouble like a nightlight does bugs.
And we'll be short, very short, on weapons. It makes the route even more critical.
How are you going to feed everyone, sir?
Working on it.
Meadows glanced at Stiakowski. She looked tired.
That's been most of the conversation. We'll take livestock, like the myriads out of Egypt. We'll go with our flocks.
What happens at the Arkansas? The river's watched and patrolled. I'd have trouble getting across with a platoon.
Just get us there, Lieutenant.
Sergeant, sir.
You're going to be in charge of 2 platoons of wolves. That's a lieutenant's command.
Any chance of turning down this promotion?
We get back to Southern Command and I'll fill out the rank reduction paperwork myself. Let's give Finner some time alone with the maps.
Don't need them, sir.
You'll at least need to know where we're starting. First waypoint is the old campsite where we dumped that load of lumber. Captain Stiakowski, a word.
Valentine stopped her as they left the tent.
Yes, Captain?
You still have friends on the old intelligence staff?
Staff? Friends? I had one nearsighted military analyst. She's coming with us. She doesn't like this moonshine brewery any more than I do.
I need everything you have on enemy organization on the Arkansas River.
That's a lot of data. The river's their backbone running up the Ozarks.
You've got to find us a way across.
Short of stealing some flatboats or swimming the whole column, I don't see how we do it. Only bridges are up in Little Rock, and that's our new headquarters.
Think about it for me.
Stiakowski's eyes narrowed, but she spoke with a cheerful bounce to her voice.
Can't count on the water's parting, can I?
Sorry.
Oh, well, when a saint came marching into camp, I had hope.
What's the crossbar for?
Hunter staff. I'm a bear. Never made it on a combat team, though. Always some excuse.
What did they invoke you for, then?
Didn't. I was sort of born into it. Only action I've seen was Hazlitt, and that was in a mortar team.
I was up that way. Didn't see the fighting, just the cleanup.
Lucky. But it was a picnic compared to the last few months.
One more thing. You had a rough time at the trial and after. You okay?
What do you mean?
You don't look well. Have you been sleeping enough?
She ran her hand through her hair and rubbed the back of her neck at the end of the gesture.
I always look like a slice of fresh death, don't worry.
I mean the fight at the trial. Hell of a thing to go through.
I'm a bit numb still. I'm glad we have a lot to do. I'll just work till I drop tonight. Be better tomorrow.
Don't short yourself sleep. Just makes everything worse. Sometimes a drink helps.
I've had 3 drinks my whole life, Captain. 2 of them were last night after all that. Didn't help. Thanks for hearing me out about the bear stuff. Lieutenant Nail just laughed. Our good general said I had too good a brain for fighting and too tight an ass for uniform pants. I hope you'll give me a chance to prove myself.
You proved yourself when you stepped in at the grog shooting.
I should have taken action before then. Been watching and waiting too long. Should have followed my gut a long time ago. When he started letting the gargoyles overfly us without so much as a shot.
She left the last to hang for a moment, and Valentine wondered at her absent stare into the distance. Then she swallowed and threw her muscular shoulders back.
Okay, time to round up some livestock and then sit down with a map. If you'll excuse me, I have a lot to do.
Colonel Meadows put himself between Valentine and Martinez as the column made ready to leave.
You've nothing to fear from me, Meadows.
Martinez glanced up to Randolph, perched on a rock above. Randolph had decided to stay and sat atop the rock, rifle in his lap, looking out at the assembled mutineers.
That whole farce was my fault. You should have been tried from your cell in the guardhouse. You're a disgrace, but I'm the bigger disgrace for letting it happen.
Valentine looked out on the road, filled with files of people in their assortment of Southern Command uniforms, rain ponchos, coats, and hats. Perhaps 600 soldiers were interspersed with a handful of tag-along civilian specialists. Pack horses and mules, leashed pigs, chickens and geese in baskets, and a total of 4 wagons added to the noise and smell. Squads of guard soldiers were relieving the men of Southern Command rifles while others poked in the pack horse loads. A cold wind coursed through the hollow.
None of the animals have a Southern Command brand.
Anka wandered up the file, cradling his long grog rifle. Out of Martinez's hearing, Valentine heard Anka make an aside to Post.
How do you get a captured gun?
He touched Post's holstered .45. It was a duplicate of Valentine's. Post had given him one while they served together on the Thunderbolt.
It's not Southern Command issue.
Letter of the law. A few dozen guns between all of us.
For a column a half mile long.
Valentine turned his attention back to Martinez, still arguing with Meadows.
You think you can move this many through the hills? Throwing away the lives of everyone here. I'll offer an amnesty. We can bring the command back together.
Meadows unhooked his pistol belt and handed it over to Martinez.
That 9mm is Southern Command issue. Wouldn't want to set a bad example.
He looked at the men holding the horse teams.
5 minutes! We get going in 5 minutes!
Don't be a fool, Colonel. We need you, and these good men.
His beady eyes glanced up and down the files of men. It seemed that those who still shaved and cleaned their uniforms were all lined up with Valentine.
Martinez, you don't have a command. You have a mob. The way things are going in this camp, you won't even have a mob much longer.
You think so? I'll give you a prediction in return. We'll outlast you.
The Eastern Washitas, Arkansas, February. In the decade before the overthrow, the interstate between Little Rock and Hot Springs enjoyed a high-tech growth spurt, with key computer networks and prominent cities worldwide challenged by everything from terrorism to extended power outages. Backup locations became the focus of a substantial slice of investment. In America's heartland, in the basements of nondescript office parks, fiber optic lines connected servers waiting to be cut into action should the need arise without the slightest interruption in data flow. Transparent redundancy, in the phrase of the times. Southwest of the blasted ruins of Little Rock, off of one of the feeder highways to the old interstate, a chocolate-colored three-story with bands of black windows once housed claim and policyholder records for one of the world's top 10 insurance companies. In 2022, the building nestled in the Washita foothills looked a little like a giant slice of devil's food cake amidst its landscaping and parking lots. Now the lots are meadows, and saplings grow on its roof as birds fly in and out of painless top-story windows. Just another unraveled piece of the commercial fabric of a rich nation. The lowest floor shows some sign of recent renovation. Plywood has been nailed up over broken windows, and horses graze behind the building in a paddock made from downed power line towers. A few camouflage-painted pickups sit parked outside a barbed wire-festooned gas station between the highway and the office building. The battered office building looks peaceful behind a sign reading, Station 26. Except for the three bodies rotting in the noonday sun. All male, all naked, and all covered in a black mixture of rotting flesh and pitch, visited only by crows. They swing from a pylon that once held four lights above the parking lot next to the gas station. An uprooted stop sign stands in the parking lot meadow between the bodies and the entrance road, redone in whitewash and black lettering. The two colors have run together in the hasty paint job, reading Saboteur's Reward.
Bullfrog's been at it again. Some bitch never could spell.
He and Valentine crouched in the thick bush bordering the improvised horse pasture, examining the bodies from a stand of wintering lilac bushes, the western wind blowing the stench the other way. The rest of the column sheltered in the deeper woods a kilometer away, eating the midday meal out of their packs. The screening wolves had been exploring the more open ground around the old office park and came across what looked like an inhabited office building. When they found the bodies, they had summoned Valentine.
Bullfrog?
Sergeant Bill Frum. Top sergeant in the guards, or so the men in his old unit say.
A gorilla.
In a manner. He and his men joined up with Solon's crew in Little Rock, and they gave him a commission. Only he's playing double agent, or whatever you want to call it. He's got 20 or 30 diehards, twice that in part-time guerrillas in the farms east of here, and about 200 men scattered around who are supposed to be hunting guerrillas. What they mostly do is look the other way.
Valentine reread the block letters on the sign.
So, what about the bodies?
Camouflage.
What's that mean?
His guerrillas aren't really going up against the KZ forces. More like sneaking around and hitting the folks who cooperate. That burned-out farm we passed yesterday, I bet that was his work.
The scouts had reported bodies in the ruins, Valentine remembered.
He's a good source of intelligence about the roads between the Rock and Hot Springs, for all that. Sometimes he sends a messenger, trades information or supplies he's been issued. In the last swap, he told us they'd opened the rail line south from the rock again.
He went to some effort to preserve the bodies. I wonder why.
It shows any inspection groups that he's killing guerrillas. I know he shoots deserters trying to get back home to Texas or Oklahoma. Picks off an occasional wildcatter come in from Illinois or Tennessee to set up shop, and then burns down an empty house or two in fake reprisals. Bullfrog likes a good bonfire. He burns anything used to trade with the enemy, from a cart to a farm, and buries locals who join up and are carrying arms.
Buries?
Buries alive in a coffin with an air hole of old pipe, so they have time to think about what they did. Then claims the guerrillas did it. That's what Major Rojo used to say anyway.
Valentine found himself feeling less contemptuous toward General Martinez and his moonshine-sotted camp. He'd rather have his men drunk and disorderly than burying people alive. Valentine crouched and crept away from the bodies through the new grass. Finner and his patrol rested among the newly mature trees that had sprung up in old landscaping.
You said this was a pretty quiet area, Jess.
Quiet's relative, Val.
Let's visit this setup.
What? Everyone?
No, keep the column hidden in the hills. I want to visit this bullfrog's lily pad and find out for sure which side he's hopped on.
Valentine crouched alongside a wrecked pickup covered in kudzu and moved his hand as though he were throwing a dart three times. He could hear Stiakowski's quick breaths behind. She'd vouched for the authenticity of Bullfrog's intelligence. As far as she knew, his information had never led to the capture or destruction of Southern Command forces. Nail, looking back at him from 20 meters ahead, whipped his wiry arm in a wheeling motion forward, and his bears rose out of the ditch in front of the chocolate-covered office building, Valentine guessed it had once held a decorative pond, and entered, two remaining behind to cover. At another wave from Nail in the doorway, they ran in after him. Valentine's old wolf senses took over, and he listened to the footsteps, the low calls, the crash of something heavy overturning.
Blue tick! Blue tick! Blue tick!
The bears had reached the door of the office building. Some boarded over windows had Station 26 stenciled on them.
Running! They're running!
Valentine rose, and another 30 men rose with him. They trotted inside the swept-up but still water-damaged reception foyer. It stretched up through the building's three stories to painless skylights and dispersed to cover all sides of the building. Years' worth of plant life had established itself on the floors above, so that roots and old extension cords and recent phone lines shared space on the wall. Valentine and Stiakowski followed a pointing bear named Ritter down a flight of stairs. Finner waited for them at the bottom. The landing was cluttered with suspiciously fresh blown leaves. They stepped down an electric-lit corridor just in time to see Nail fling himself at a vault-like door that was being closed.
Open up, Sergeant Frum! Southern Command Operations Verification Squeak 3!
That's out of date!
Valentine examined the cinder block walls. Heavy girders supported a concrete ceiling above. This bullfrog had chosen his panic room, or hideout, or bomb shelter, well.
Southern Command hasn't set a new code for this year. It's the last effective password.
Then, to the door,
Come on, Sergeant Squeak 3! This is Lieutenant Harold Nail, Volmer's Bears!
Valentine pressed his ear to the cool metal and listened. If anyone stood on the other side of the door, he or she remained silent. Finner pounded on the door.
Jess Finner here! For Christ's sake, Bullfrog, give me a break and open up! These bears is just gonna blow you out otherwise. I'm not shitting you, old buddy.
Valentine heard an authoritative click from the door. Valentine breathed a sigh of relief. They had no explosives to make good Finner's threat. The door opened and a brilliant beam of light filled the corridor. It hit Valentine's eyes like a knife, giving him an instant headache. Valentine could just make out light frosted outlines of heads and gun barrels.
Whoa there! Friends, okay? I'm codenamed Ghost, Cat of Southern Command.
No Southern Command no more.
You call me Sir, Sergeant, and get that light off.
Just making sure.
The light went out, and Valentine could see a dozen hard faces, guns ready, set against nondescript gray-green office decor.
Just making sure, Sir.
I'm not blowing your head off, and I'm not calling you Sir. I might change my mind about one. Like I said, no Southern Command to say Sir to. They sold us out just like they did my granddaddy in 22.
A man proportioned a little like Anka stepped forward, filling the doorway, and held up his hand, palm out.
Howdy, Jess. Had to make sure there wasn't a gun to your head. I'm Bill Frum. What can I do for you boys?
It turned out Bullfrog was willing to do almost nothing. Valentine sat among silent machines in the dusty basement room. A single candle made more shadows than light. He stared at the six dark boxes. Each about the size of an upended footlocker, the old computers, net servers, or so the tiny chrome letters next to the main power button said, stood like a squad of soldiers on parade. Bullfrog's men avoided this small, stuffy corner room, like Visigoths afraid to enter the heart of a Roman temple, fearing ancient, half-understood wrath. A little dusting and some power, and it would be hard to tell the past half-century had ever happened, except for some long-ago philosopher who'd written, "The joke is on us," on the wall, using a permanent marker to form the 2-foot block letters. He had to think. Valentine's command was divided. The rest of the column was resting in the woods just under a mile away, while the team that penetrated the old office building stayed and mixed with Bullfrog's men, with orders not to reveal anything about their numbers. Bullfrog had taken the handful of guests on a tour of his domain, made cozy by gear plucked from the dead organs of Southern Command or issued by the Kurians. Crates of supplies covered with stenciled letters were stacked floor to ceiling, along with guns, leather goods, bolts of cloth, camp gear, cooking pots, and medical and commissary supplies. The sergeant organized his command with a professional NCO's eye to detail and a mind for long-term operations. His men were clad in a variant of the old Louisiana regular outfits Valentine had an intimate knowledge of from his days posing as a Kurian coastal marine in the Gulf. Bullfrog wouldn't part with any of it, orders or no. He was overgenerous with what was lying around on the messroom tables and counters, offering the guests canned peanut paste smeared on heartroot, jerky, creamed corn, even root beer.
"No Southern Command no more."
This was Bullfrog's response each and every time the subject came up.
"Just patriots and collaborators, mister. Patriots and collaborators. We've gone underground, literally. I got arsenals hidden all over the place for my night watch."
"Your guerrillas?"
"Yeah."
He smiled so that his face seemed mostly made up of teeth.
"Hell of a war I got going here. I'm running both sides of it."
"And what do the Kurians get out of it?"
"A bunch of somedays. I'm supposed to be recruiting. They're broke dick on troops, not getting as much cooperation out of Ozark folks as they expected. And the troops that took down Southern Command are heading home. They got soldiers running the lights and phones, driving trucks, running switches on the railroad. Most locals won't do anything unless you got a soldier poking them along with a bayonet."
"What do you do with the ones who cooperate?"
"They get a warning. The night watch beats the hell out of them. After that..."
He passed an index finger across his throat.
"We could really use some of the guns I saw in your armory."
"Can't. Strict inventory. Those are for the forces I'm supposed to be recruiting. They watch guns and gas like Jew accountants. There's never a pistol missing or a drop short. That's why they keep me as honcho hereabout. Figure if I'm honest about the small stuff, I'll be honest about the big stuff too."
Valentine felt hot and restless. He wanted to swing his arms and kick with his legs. Seeing the hoarded supplies appear and then vanish like a desert mirage frustrated him. If he could draw on Sergeant Bill Bullfrog Frum's stores in a substantial way, his column might be able to make it the rest of the way to the Boston Mountains. They were already short of food. 700 people on the march couldn't live on the local rabbits and wild onions. Frum's obstinacy might mean the destruction of his column. He needed release. An hour chopping wood might clear his buffers. What did that expression mean, anyway?
"Hell, sir. You look like a bear warming up for a fight."
"What's that?"
Nail stood in the doorway, scratching the afternoon's growth on his face. The bear officer put a half-eaten lasagna MRE on one of the old computers and crossed his arms as though he were wrapped in a straitjacket, pulled his heels together, and rocked on them. Valentine realized that Nail was aping his pose.
"You look like a stomp-down spring."
"About to go boing, huh?"
Valentine forced his body to relax.
"I'll give you a warning before I snap."
"I've worked with bears for 6 years, Captain. I'm used to it. It was more the staring at nothing look in your eye. You smell action in the wind?"
"No. I should go back to Post and Meadows."
"You know, sir, we got enough men to empty this joint. Lots of stuff here we could use.
Old Frum could say his headquarters got attacked unexpectedly.
The sergeant's worked hard on his setup. I don't want to give the Kurians a reason to replace him.
Still like to see Bullfrog taken down a notch. He's been the biggest buck of these woods for too long. Thinks he makes right and wrong. I don't like making war on civilians, ours or theirs.
Valentine felt a better warmth at those words. He saw a crack of light from Frum's locked-off door.
Neither do I. Follow me, would you?
Valentine traced a line with his index finger under the "Joke is on us" graffiti as he left. He nodded at one of Bullfrog's gorillas, dripping wet with a towel around his waist as he came back from the improvised bath. Bullfrog had turned an old janitorial closet into a one-man shower and followed his ears to the canteen where Bullfrog was shooting the breeze with Finner about the last few months. Valentine heard from as he approached.
Troop trains heading back south and west lately. Borrowed troops heading home with boxcars of booty and prisoners. As long as the night watch keeps out of Little Rock and away from the lines, these hills stay quiet. If I touch the railroads, I get a flying regiment sent.
Bullfrog, I'm taking over.
Bullfrog had one leg up on the table, the worn waffle pattern in the boot turned toward him like a religious icon shifted to ward off evil.
Taking over what?
Valentine's heart tripped when he saw Bullfrog's hand fall to his holster. Valentine stuck his thumbs in his belt.
Your unit. They'll be taking orders from me until I depart.
Doubt it. They answer to me.
Never said otherwise. I outrank you. I'll give the orders to you, then you'll amplify, organize, and carry out. Way it always worked in Southern Command.
Oh, that again. I told you before, I don't...
You will, or I'll knock you into next week.
The sergeant stood up. Valentine's leveled stare hit Bullfrog just below the collarbone.
You think you can whip me?
If you won't take my word for it.
If you're dead set on an ass-kicking, I'll oblige, Valentine.
You've been around the Kurians too long. You're not the local demigod. Time to put you back in the chain of command since you can't handle the responsibility.
Bullfrog turned an intriguing shade of purple, took a breath.
I'm gonna use these stores. And another thing, I won't stand for any more reprisals against civilians.
I fight with my fists, not paper.
That's your prerogative. I'm not filing a Jagger complaint.
Bullfrog wasted no time. He led Valentine outside. Word passed around among the men via the mysterious network that exists in any organization, always faster and more effective than any communications flowchart. Valentine took off his tunic as he exited the plant-cluttered office building. The cool air felt good as it licked across his hot ears. The sky had become overcast again. The late winter rains looked to be building again. Meadows, guided by a pair of wolves, was crossing the parking lot.
Valentine! Since we're resting, I wanted to...
Sorry, sir. Busy.
Meadows' forehead wrinkled as Bullfrog removed his own jacket.
Is that you, Frum? No, Frum. Sergeant Frum.
Colonel Meadows.
Meadows turned in a circle as he looked at the mixed contingent of men, some throwing suspenders over their shoulders or still pulling on boots as they emerged from the office building. Valentine ignored him, but the remoter, calmer quarters of his brain filed away Bullfrog's familiarity with Meadows.
Men! An exchange of blows between officers of Southern Command is considered a court-martial offense by the Uniform Code, especially if there's a difference in rank. I picked this quarrel with Sergeant Frum. He's to be held blameless.
Valentine spat into each palm and formed his hands into tight fists.
Sergeant Frum, do you hold me blameless under the Uniform Code?
Bullfrog planted his feet.
You could count on it, Valentine.
Tell the men, Colonel Meadows, so he's a witness. I don't want to hang with those others.
Bullfrog somehow managed to shout using the side of his mouth, keeping his vision locked on Valentine.
He's blameless, too, under the Uniform Code.
Valentine lowered his fists.
Sergeant, the Southern Command's Uniform Code isn't a buffet. You can't pick and choose which rules apply. You either operate under it or you don't. You've just accepted its protection. And with its protection goes...
Bullshit. Tricks won't...
He charged, arms up and reaching for Valentine's throat. But Bullfrog was just big, and Valentine was a cat. He sidestepped the rush, reached out and grabbed a handful of quizzling issue collar, whipped his legs up and got them around Bullfrog's waist. They both went down, Bullfrog using his weight and strength to hammer Valentine into the ground. Valentine got his forearm under Bullfrog's chin, an old wrestling move he'd learned, the hard way, from his old top sergeant in Zulu Company. Bullfrog croaked in what Patel called his hangman. The sergeant gave one terrific shrug and spun. But Valentine clung, battered and smashed by Bullfrog's weight, with the same tenacity as Rikki Tikki Tavi, with his teeth locked and gnawed the cobra's neck. For the honor of his family, Rikki wanted to be found dead with his teeth locked in the enemy. And for the honor of Zulu Company's champion wrestler, Valentine clung to his chokehold despite the red, yellow, red flashes of pain from his ribs. Valentine suspected a trick until he felt and smelled warm urine on his leg.
He's done.
Valentine got to shaky legs and brushed himself off.
Somebody get the sergeant a towel.
Enough of that, Captain.
He hooked Valentine with his good hand and his thumb and finger, pulling the cat up.
You men, help the sergeant inside. Captain, you'd better have Narcisse look at those ribs. The rest of you, pay off your bets and get inside. Sun's going down.
Valentine's eyes rose to the tarred bodies hanging from a lamppost. Meadows nodded in understanding.
Lieutenant Nail, take a detail and get those bodies down. Anyone else feels like fist fighting can work off their aggressions digging 6 feet down.
You come back from a beating like no man I ever knew.
Narcisse shook her head in wonder the next morning, applying cool, water-soaked towels to Valentine's battered frame. Unfortunately, Bullfrog's substantial inventory didn't include an ice machine. Valentine looked at his reflection in the washroom mirror. A great blue and purple mark on his chin was just beginning to show a hint of yellow through the skin. The right side of his ribcage looked like Van Gogh's Starry Night.
I've never broken a bone before.
He felt around at the soft spot. Narcisse wrapped him across the probing knuckles with her handless arm.
Leave it be. I need a heal. Just a rib. Count yourself lucky. Your lungs stay airy, and you got lots of stuff holding that rib in place.
A heavy tread sounded in the basement corridor, and Ankaz bent over frame appeared. There was now enough of a mixture of Valentine's column and the gorillas that Stiakowski had judged it safe for Anka to make an appearance. The Golden One bore a contraption that looked a little like a corset made of tube steel. He'd put it together using the frames of a stack of office chairs he'd found and leather scraps.
I adjusted it, my David. Try it now.
Anka could be as gentle as a cooing dove when he chose to be. The great arms, thick as well-fed pythons, wrapped themselves around Valentine and then worked the buckles on the brace. Valentine had always had good posture. Constant insistence from first his parents and then the more recently departed Father Max had given him an instinctive erect carriage. But with the brace on, he felt like a heroically posed statue, elbows slightly out. But he could breathe this time, unlike the preliminary fitting.
Thanks, old horse.
He tottered out into the hallway, walking a bit like a drunk trying to conceal the extent of his load. He couldn't favor his bad leg the way he usually strode. He made for Meadows, who stood at the far end of the hall, checking out supplies as they were distributed to Valentine's column. A somewhat subdued sergeant, now Lieutenant, Valentine corrected himself, from, stood just beside him, the bruise under his chin looking like a hangman's beard. Colonel Meadows and Bullfrog were comfortable enough with each other that Valentine had suggested that Meadows stay at the hideout with whoever felt unfit for a try at the Boston Mountains. Bullfrog could find jobs for them as guerrillas or in some of the settlements under his command. Meadows accepted, and with the help of a staff captain had begun to sort through the hoard of Quisling supplies. Everyone seemed happier for it, like tired horses back in familiar stalls.
All this stuff missing. It'll go against me at the next inspection.
You'll be able to justify it.
How's that?
You were doing your job. Recruiting and equipping warm bodies.
Bullfrog scratched his head, and Valentine turned to Meadows.
Colonel, I think I'm fit enough to talk to the men. Could you get them together, please, sir?
The men who couldn't fit underground had to be dispersed every night in case of a prowling reaper looking for life sign where it wasn't supposed to be. Once the sun was well up, they usually gathered for meals and news. There had been plenty of the first, and not much of the latter lately, though everyone was looking better for a few days' rest. Stiakowski popped up, dabbing a coffee mustache from her lips and showing her old snap-to-it briskness. She'd spent the past day combing through Quisling paperwork with the help of a corporal on Bullfrog's quasi-Quisling staff.
I'll pass word around as soon as the morning patrol comes in.
Lieutenant Frum, you think you could send out your men as sentry? I'd hate to have a convoy come by for refueling and spot the whole bunch of us.
Sure, Captain.
Anything overnight?
Another train, pulling south. Men returning to Texas and Louisiana, looked like.
The Ozarks seem good and pacified. We're beaten, they know it.
Always interesting times, the pause between conquest and exploitation. I wonder if they're as organized as they think they are.
Valentine's selection of documentation from Bullfrog's files had given her quick mind enough to make a guess as to what the column's next move would be.
Or if we're as beat as they think we are.
Valentine stood at one of the glassless windows above the entrance to the office building on the second floor. Bullfrog hadn't gotten around to reclaiming this floor of the building yet. Birds flitted in one side of the building and out the other, zipping over low cubicles and around offices. Creeper and broken glass crunched underfoot as he tottered to the window, glad that the men hadn't seen Anka half carry him upstairs. The men and women who had followed him out of General Martinez's camp sat around the door of the lot and in the notch leading toward the main entrance. Unformed, unranked, a mass of faces and variegated uniforms, some still damp, Valentine noted, from a quick wash. Some elbowed others at Valentine's appearance, and faces turned up toward them. The chatter stilled. The silence of their anticipation made Valentine oddly uncomfortable. Valentine inflated his lungs, ignoring the pain in his rib.
You all know about the cats, am I right?
Yes, sir!
Valentine thought about making them all holler a response back at him, but he wanted an honest conversation with the men, not an oration filled with theatrical tricks.
They work behind the Kurian line, sometimes in their uniform. I've done it on more than one occasion.
He let that sink in for a moment before continuing.
We're making for what's left of Southern Command in the Boston Mountains. But if we keep going as we are, snaking back and forth, backtracking and sidestepping, we'll only show up sick, hungry, unarmed, and tired, if we make it at all. If you men are willing, I know a way we can ride instead of walk and join our comrades with rifles in our hands and ammunition in our cartridge cases.
They perked up at this. Even the jokers and snoozers in every informal assembly of personnel shut their mouths and fixed eyes on him.
There will be risks, but the risk of getting across the Arkansas River and through the lines with an unarmed column this big is about the same by my calculations. So we have to balance the likely risks with the possible rewards. Anyone who isn't up for it, anyone who wants out of the game, can stay here with Colonel Meadows and Lieutenant Frum. Guerrilla service is just as honorable, just as important. But I have to make it to the Boston Mountains for reasons of my own. Anyone who wants to follow me, meet at the hollow where Lieutenant Post and the wolves are guarding the wagons.
Then what?
It was Stiakowski calling out, just as they'd arranged when Valentine went over his prepared speech with her.
Then we shave, strip, and sew.